Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
The Romance Drama Podcast is a proud member of the But Why Though podcast community.
Hi everyone, I am Carolyn Hines, and this is the first official podcast recording for Beyond the Romance Drama Podcast. Now, if any of you are familiar with me, you know that I love talking about K-dramas, Chinese dramas, Japanese dramas, and I figured instead of just doing a written blog, I would do a podcast. So after 2 years of doing my other podcast, so here's what happened. I decided to take the leap and start another podcast. And for this one, we're generally going to be focusing on Asian dramas, and it will be, they're all going to be of different genres. And we're going to talk about our interests, the pros and cons of the shows, the themes, the aesthetics, the amazing fashion, the pretty people, the great acting. And we're also going to talk about things that we may have problems with the storylines, the writing. So it's all not going to be like, you know, say it's all amazing, though. Some dramas are a headache to get through, and they're frustrating and they're aggravating, but we love them nonetheless. So for this first episode of Beyond the Romance, I'm going to be discussing the 2007 drama Coffee Prince. And my first guests with me today are Josie and Joycelyn. And so before we get into the show, I'm going to have them introduce themselves to you and say what got them interested into dramas, and then we'll begin the show. So first up is Josie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Josie, and I've been watching dramas for over 10 years, definitely over 10 years. I started listening to K-pop first. And the friend who introduced me to K-pop in high school, she was watching a drama on her iPhone Classic. And I was like, what are you watching? And it was a sitcom. And I started watching it. And I was like, do you have anything else? And then that's how I started. So that was 2008. Yeah, 2008. And I've been watching K-dramas and Taiwanese dramas and Japanese dramas and mainland China dramas ever since.
Mm-hmm. And for Joycelyn.
Okay, so my name is Joycelyn. I've been watching dramas for, I feel like it's almost two decades, because it was either the ending of middle school or the beginning of middle school. And that was around the time when You Are My Sunshine, I think, was on. And I started watching it because I accidentally found an Indian drama and I was trying to find the channel again. And then it ended up on a K-drama. So then I just like stuck with it. But after that, I've been watching Taiwanese dramas, Japanese dramas, Lacorns, all the dramas. So yeah.
Yeah, for me, I think we're all three are pretty similar.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think we're all three of us have pretty similar entrances into K-dramas and into the Asian and Southeast Asian dramas in general, because for me, I started watching dramas years ago. So let me see, I have to date by when I moved to Canada. So I moved to Canada in 2009, but I had been watching dramas off and on for a few years before then. And I say off and on because in Barbados, we didn't really have the channels. And usually if you got them, you had to go to like the video store to get like Bollywood dramas and occasionally Taiwanese dramas and stuff, because they would be in a little small space next to like the more popular action films, which I'm very heavily into. So I did occasionally see them on some channels if we were lucky to get them, because we had a form of cable called it was cable, but we had like satellite dishes, as sometimes the channels would drop, so we couldn't see them. But I kind of got into K-dramas at that time and K-pop at that time for the same reason. Like I would see like the videos And I remember one of the first videos that comes to my mind is Fantastic Baby by Big Bang. And I remember, and it was Big Bang, and then it was groups like TVSQ. But I couldn't really get into them because I wasn't able to watch their videos like regularly. But those are the videos that always stuck in my head. And I remember thinking, wow, these Korean aesthetics are something else for the videos. I mean, the videos used to be wild. They use a lot of gel and pure spray for those. So that's kind of how I got my interest in. But then I kind of lost touch with them because we didn't have the channels anymore. Then I moved here to Canada and I got back into K-pop and into K-drama, I would say around 2016 or just before, because I got back into them because I found Drama Fever, RIP to the best I ever.
Yes.
Poor Wano. And again, I was kind of watching casually, but then I really got into them because of Goblin. And then because of Goblin, I wanted to watch more Gong Yoo's projects. So then I found Coffee Prince, which is the show we are going to discuss today. And Coffee Prince is a classic. It's considered one of the most popular K-dramas ever produced. Is considered to be the one of the shows that was responsible for the Hallyu wave, which is, you know, where you had Asian Korean dramas being spread not only internationally but more broadly to Asia in general. And the show showed from July to August in 2007, and it was 17 episodes, which is weird for a K-drama because the format is usually 10, 12, 14, 16, 18. So it usually goes in even numbers. So to have an odd number K-drama is very weird. And we're going to get into why 17 episodes was actually, I think, kind of goes against the show a little bit. We're going to get into that a little bit. But so I'm going to give a brief synopsis of the show, and then we'll just get into our cons and then our pros of the show. So the synopsis for Coffee Prince is a tomboy mistaken for a lad maintains the deception for the sake of employment. The situation becomes complicated when her male boss begins to develop feelings for this boy, or for who he believes is a boy. And for the cast is Gong Yoo Bae, who stars as a chaebo named Choi Han Kyo. And then the other main lead is Yoon Ye, who plays Go Eun Chan. And then there's Lee Sung Kyun, who plays as Choi Han Sung, and Choi Jung An, who plays as Han Yoo Joo, Kim Jae Wook as No Sung Ki, Kim Dong Wook as Jin Harim, and Eon, who plays Wang Min Yeop. There are other characters, but these are the main characters in the show. So the two main characters are Han Kyu and Eun Chan. Han Kyu is the chaebol, so he's the person who owns the coffee shop, which goes on to be known as Coffee Prince, because their main attraction to the cafe is, it's a cafe run by handsome men. Go Eun Chan, he meets accidentally and he believes that she's a boy. Though there's hints that he kind of was ignoring that she's actually a girl, but because she wants this job and she needs this job, she decides to work for him and go and, you know, continue the deception that she is a boy. And chaos ensues.
Chaos, yes.
So for the two of you, I want both of you to go and tell. So we'll take turns discussing our cons, and then we're going to our pros. So Joycelyn, you can go first this time.
Okay, so I feel like there's not as many cons. Okay, I'm just kidding. There are cons. The cons, I feel like, is that they didn't explore the princess stories. Like, we get little bits and pieces of Harim, we get bits and pieces of Sungi, and like there's no in-depth, like there's nothing. Like, I feel like we didn't explore their life until maybe the ending of it, where it's like, okay, something's wrong with Harim's dad, there's something wrong, or what's it called, becomes a model. I feel like I kind of wanted to see more from the princess story. Sometimes more often than I did want to see for the main. That's just like one con for me. I think another con is how they kind of, the relationships between both couples was a little off, because I guess the adult couple, they didn't seem like an adult couple. They just looked like they weren't dealing with their issues. Mm-hmm. While Kitty couple with Hangil and Go Eun Chan, they were just being kids, but they were adults. So I was like, I felt like there was more that we should have explored from their relationships, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. But just before we go to Josie, so for anyone listening who thinks that it's about adults and teens, what she means is that there's two main couples, and there's Hankyul and Eunchan, but then there's Hansung and Yuju. So Yuju and Hansung, they're supposed to be the more mature and the more seasoned couple. So like they were together longer, they broke up and got back together. So they have the sense of history. So they do seem like the more mature couple, whereas Hankyul and Eunchan are more playful, and and they're not that much difference in age, because Eunchan is, I believe she said she's 24, mm-hmm. and Hankyul is about 30. No, he's about 28, because he's 3 years younger than Hansung, who's 31. So there's only like a 4 year age difference between Hankyul and Eunchan, but they do have a more youthful feel about them as a couple. They're very playful. And of course this happens before he even finds out she's a girl, but as a quote unquote couple, or as brohams or bros, as they said, they were very lively and very playful. So Josie, you can go on.
Yeah, so for me, I don't have too many cons besides, you know, certain writing and plot issues, but I really wish that we saw some character development with Go In Chan's family. I think that the sister and the mom, their characters stayed the same almost, and I think that we maybe like the last two episodes, her mother kind of grows up in a sense and starts to actually give motherly advice. But it would have been nice to see, as Go In Chan is going through her process, we saw in the background the mom and the sister becoming more adult-like in sense to prepare themselves for her eventual departure. So I kind of wish that was the case. And I understand where they were coming from with the gender confusion. And I think the writer was trying to make a statement, and I think that statement was lost somewhere in the middle of the show. Mm-hmm. And I think that would have been so perfect, especially at that time in Korea and in the world, to kind of explore that idea of love between people and not necessarily genders. And I mean, they touched on that, but I think they could have gone a little bit more deeper. So yeah.
My cons for the show are basically the same as yours. Like with regards to the couples, Hansung and Yuju frustrated me, because I think Yuju and Eunchan are very similar in this way, in that they were very selfish about certain things. Like Yuju, they had been together for, I think, about 4 or 5 years. They were together for a really long time. And she had an affair with this man for a year and broke up with Hansung and left to go to New York within the space of 1 day. And then she leaves for 2 years and comes back. And in the same day she lands, she goes to him and is like, I want to get back together with you. Excuse me? What? And she's very selfish in the end, because Hansung begins to develop feelings for Eunchan, because they kept bumping into each other and then they became friends. And then he started to develop romantic feelings for her, which I could understand. But Yuju gets all upset and gets angry, because she's like, how dare you do this to me? He's like, but some people call it emotional cheating, but they weren't even really together, because they were still trying to figure out, should we really commit to getting back together? And he was only talking with Eunchan for like a couple weeks. She cheated with this man for a year, left for 2 years, came back and is be like, and demands his loyalty and his commitment to her immediately. She never gives him a chance to process his grief. She never gives him a chance to process his anger. And she's very selfish, and they're supposed to be the more mature couple within the show. But to me, they were the most immature in the fact that neither of them wanted to really discuss their feelings. And when they did, they always ended up shouting and getting into these anger matches, and someone would always start more friendly, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas for Eunchan, she's kind of selfish in the fact that she had multiple opportunities to tell Hankyul that she was really a girl, especially when she started to develop feelings for him. And I understand that she was insecure about her femininity, understood. But from the time this man says, I am ready to throw all social concerns away. I'm ready to like go against my family and commit to you and be with you as a man. He says, we will take this to the end. I felt that's where she should have been like, yo, before you fully commit, let me tell you something. And they could have had a discussion, but she did not. Because I always thought, I've seen the show like 3-4 times, and just before we did the, we were doing the recording, we the three of us watched the show throughout the week. And I'm always like, well, how did she think this was going to end? At what point was she going to reveal that she was a woman when they were ready to have sex?
She was never planning on revealing it.
That's because the thing.
He was going to leave. And I feel like in her defense, not even the whole insecurity about femininity, but I feel like she kept on trying to hint at him, like, what would happen if I was a girl? And then the stuff he was saying, like, oh, my mom wants me to marry someone like her, and all these, like, I'm not going to tell you that I'm a girl. Like, I need to keep that to myself, because I feel like, I don't know, even know how to explain it. Like, she was afraid of how he would view her, but she was also afraid for herself. Like, what will happen to me? Like, if he finds out I'm a girl, he's going to get angry. If he finds out I'm a girl, he's not going to ever want to talk to me. Like, how do I actually explain to him that, hey, by the way, I'm a girl? And then also he keeps on saying, like, well, I'm glad that you're a boy because then we can be brothers. I'm glad that you're a boy because then we can spend time together. Like, in my mind, in her 24-year-old mind, she's thinking, like, okay, it's best for me not to say anything. Plus, she has no one by her who will be like, you should go and tell him that you are a girl, because that would work out. Everyone is basically saying, nah, just leave it alone.
So, that's the thing, right? Because when she does become friends with Hansung, he never encourages her to tell Hansung the truth. He's like, I understand where you're coming from emotionally. I understand you're scared. But he never actually takes the time to look at things from Hankyu's perspective and say, you know, this could end badly for you if you're not honest with him. And I thought that was actually kind of unrealistic, because Hankyu is his cousin for one thing. Mm-hmm. He knows how his cousin is. He could have been like, this guy is going to get angry. I would suggest you talk with him and be honest with him, especially now that you're realizing that you have romantic feelings for him. And that's one of my biggest cons, is the fact that no one is ever really on Hankyu's side with regards to the situation, except for Harim. Harim is the one person, when he does find out, he was like, yo, you need to tell him the truth. You're being selfish, and you're all or not listening to anything this man is thinking or feeling.
So I was just wondering, Eun-chan really doesn't have any friends. I feel the first real friend she has is Hankyu. Like, I think that's the first person when they initially meet and they start hanging out. It's like a friendship. And I'm wondering if the writer doesn't have to be another girl or another female, but just someone besides Hansung or Hankyu who was just straightforward with her from the beginning. Like, she always had a friend from the beginning. What would have her character been like? Would have she been more open? Would have she had someone kind of like this moral, but like, hey girl, like, this is not going to end well for either of you. I was just thinking about that while you guys were talking, what would have been like if we had a friend for Eun-chan from the beginning.
But you see, if they had written the sister and the mother better, they could have been that for her, because her mother could have been her moral support. Her mother could have been the person that she goes through to talk to and discuss her feelings. But instead, they made both the mother and the sister very selfish, very self-centered, and caring nothing about Eun-chan apart from the money that she brings in as a sole breadwinner in the family. Like, they offer no kind of support to her.
So in that sense, like, nobody was on either of their side. Like, nobody was on his side to be like, hey, express your feelings first to him, because he might feel the same way. No one was on her side, because the mother didn't say anything. Everyone is basically telling her to keep it a secret. Even the princess, other than Harim, like, the princess, when they found out, no one encouraged her. They basically were like, don't say anything. Or she was like, don't say anything because I don't want to lose my job. And I'm not saying that they're blackmailing her, but in a sense, I felt like they were basically blackmailing her. I don't know how to explain it.
Like, no, it's true, because they're all concerned about what they could gain from the situation. Her family only cared about her possibly losing a job, because then they would have to actually go and find a proper job. Like, the mother would have to actually go find a proper job. The sister would, in my opinion, should have been having a part-time job, because she was, 16, 17, old enough to have a part-time job. Go find a job at a convenience store or something. And the princess, like, Sun-ki, he really didn't really give a damn. Like, he's the kind of character, he's like, I'm here just to get paid, literally. Mm-hmm. He's here just so I can get paid. But when he did started to get into the whole situation, he's like, it's not that big a deal, don't say anything, which is really bad advice.
So it's like, even if she wanted to say anything, like, everyone was basically against her. Even Yuju was not helpful, and she could have been like a helpful older sister who could have been saying like, hey, you should tell. But then again, she's selfish too, because she knew both of the men liked her. I cannot stand her. She knew both of the men liked her, and she just did not care about any of their feelings. So
she loved the attention. She loved she loved it when Hangyul was following her around, calling her, playing around with her, and then she liked going to Hamsung and getting that attention. So she just loved that feeling of being wanted by both of these men. So she wasn't going to say anything.
Okay, yeah. Everybody was selfish.
To be honest, the one person who had no ulterior motives in this whole entire thing was Hangyul. He's the one character that was always upfront and very honest about who he was as an individual, what he wanted. Mm-hmm. Everyone wanted something for him. Even his mother and his grandmother, they wanted something for him. The grandmother wanted him to prove that he was good enough to run the business. Mm-hmm. So then he had 3 months to turn triple the profit, which is utterly ridiculous, because most businesses take 3 years to get
break even. Their
profits. So she was giving him 3 months to triple profits, which is utterly ridiculous. The mother was just like, I don't want to rock the boat. So, you know, go along with whatever your grandmother is saying. And then there's the older gentleman who was like the manager of the cafe. He is so dirty. Oh my God, he's so gross. But all he cared about was getting the profit. All he cared about was making the business run. He didn't care how the stress that Hankyu was under. He didn't care that Hankyu was like, because he knew that Eun-chan was a girl. And he knew, and he saw them, and he saw Hankyul developing feelings for Eun-chan, and he said nothing. And then he actually started to be insulting towards him, because he was like, he's like, oh, your emotions are whatever, getting in the way, whatever. And he was like, and I'm like, but you know that she's a girl, you know that the potential fallout from all of this. And
even when Min-yup found out, he told him, let them be. They're two people falling in love, let them be. No,
because the thing with this show, and the premise is good, because the difference between Hankyul, Eun-chan being a girl dressing as a boy, being a tomboy, is that has nothing to do with her gender identity. Mm-hmm. Now, for instance, if she was transgender, mm-hmm. or she was bisexual, or I think the dynamic and the concept would be different, because then you understand that she has more of a what's the word I'm looking for? Not only a personal emotional stake in it, but also a societal, a statement mm-hmm. how society would be accepting of her. Mm-hmm. There's that. Whereas for Hankyul, he is in exactly that position, because he's going against what society, because South Korea, and like even back then, it, like everywhere is very patriarchal, and men have specific roles, and men have to act masculine and do specific things. And he was willing to go against his family, his friends, society, to say, I am going to get into this open, because he wasn't even about hiding it. He was being very open and affectionate with this person that he believes is a man. He's like, I'm going to be in an open relationship with a man. I'm going to go against everything that society and everyone is telling me and accept the fact that I apparently am gay, because he never thought that he was gay. He was strictly heterosexual, but he's developing this feelings for this man. So he was like, it is what it is. So like that's why I always say that Hankyul had he was in a more precarious position, right? Because he was going against everything that society was under. He was had pressure for his family, everything. Whereas Eun-chan, all she had to do was put on a dress, walk down the street, and people wouldn't say anything about her. If you get, I'm not saying that her feelings and her concerns are invalidated, but she to me had more less stakes in the potential fallout. She wouldn't have been condemned by society either way, because like tomboys are still accepted. Like if she's a girl that likes wearing her pants, no big deal, right? But like for him, he's a man in a relationship with another man. That's a completely different kettle of fish right there.
Yeah. Plus his family has money. Like there's so much implications that go into that. So it's like,
and being the only son.
Yeah.
In Korea.
Okay.
That time, being his only son. Wow.
and the inheritor of all our grandmother's wealth, and he's willing to throw that away.
For this one person?
And this one person who apparently doesn't really give two buckups about his feelings, because she got more upset about him being a buck. You know what I mean? Like, when she when he does find out that she's a girl, like, he's not even entitled to his feelings. Like, everyone is telling him, go easy on Eunchan, she's having it tough or whatever. I'm like, no, she's not.
No, but she wanted to give him a leeway. I feel like when I first watched it, I was super mad because I was like, why are you being like this? But as I started watching again and, like, looking at the dialogue, she wanted to give him leeway to, like, you know, deal with his feelings. But she also wanted him to know that she was sorry and she didn't want to hurt him. But she also understood. Like, she said, I understand why you're mad. And I understand you never want to talk to me again. Like, I just want you to know that I'm sorry. Everyone else around him was like, why are you mad? Even her mom was like, is he really mad at this? But she, out of everyone else, even though she didn't understand, like, all the societal things that he was going through, she was like, you know what? I know I screwed up and I'm sorry. I just want you to know that I'm sorry. And that even though I didn't mean to hurt you, like, this is where we are right now, which sucks. I'm shocked that he literally didn't throw even a bigger fit than he did earlier.
That's always got him, that he didn't, like,
he's such a pure soul. He is such a pure soul. Like, when he loves with his whole body. Because, like, just the way Gongyu portrays Hankyu, like, when Eunchan walks into the room, like, his eyes, the way his eyes just start glittering when he just sees her in the cafe. So that's why when he doesn't get as upset as I would have gotten upset, or anybody else I would expect, I'm like, no, it's because he loves her. Like, he loves
that hurts the most.
And that, I mean,
no, he does. I think to me, out of all the dramas I've watched, and ones that I've watched so many that some of you have forgotten, but he is really, to me, one of the best written male characters. He's one of the best love interests, and he's one of the best acted characters, because Gongyu plays him so well, where there's moments he can be extremely immature and playful, but there are the times where he has to be serious, he gets full in it, and then the times where he has to be emotional, he invests in it completely. Like, the scene on the beach, I think it's episode 10-11, this is legit one of my all-time favorite scenes in any K-drama, where she's laying down on there, they took a drive to the beach, this is just before he commits to them, but he's trying to figure out his sexuality, because he is questioning his sexuality, because he's a man. He's like, I've always been heterosexual. I've never, ever, ever, ever had any kind of romantic or sexual inclination to a male. So he's like wondering, why am I attracted to this person? Because it's like, he doesn't only like Eunchan as a person, he's attracted to him, right? And they're on the beach, and he's at this moment where you can see him, the struggle in his body, and he's like just reaching out to touch her, and I'm like, oh my god, this is,
it's like he's like testing the boundaries, like they're near the water, so he's like testing the water,
yes,
and
right,
he's, and he's like touching her for the first time in this super sexual, not sexual way, but
in a tender way,
in a tender way that's more than just a Hyung Dongsaeng type of touch. So beautiful.
I love that scene, so because, and it's so simple, there's nothing, there's no big dramatic music, nothing, is quiet waves, and he's just like reaching to touch her head and touching her waist, and he's like, I've touched this person before, but I'm touching him in a completely different way, and a completely different, and then there's that little tear in his eye. I'm like, oh,
the way he looked at her while she was sleeping, like that, that's love right
there. And I think that's where he just accepts it, like in his mind he says, whatever happens, this, I'm in.
Yeah, he accepts it. But the thing is remember after he breaks it, because when they go home, he was like, I'm going to have to fire you. But the reason he wanted to fire her, or fire who he believed that was a man at that time, was because I think he didn't want to place Eunchan in a position where the park, I think he was also considering the power dynamics, because he's the boss. And she's a subordinate. So I think he can't quit because that's his company. But he fired her because he didn't want to place her in this position where she would be looked at by society in a bad way for being in a romantic relationship with her boss, but also so that other workers, the other princes, wouldn't judge her for being in a relationship with him. And I think it was also that he was feeling so much that he needed space. Like, he is so in love with this person, like, he's like overwhelmed. He's like, I need physical distance from you because my feelings for you are so much. And I just love, I think that part, that aspect is the best writing for the show. Like there's other things where the writing for the show does not work. Like we've mentioned the side characters, but also yeah. I think there's moments where the writers really wanted to get into discussing sexuality and gender fluidity and those kind of things. But they, because it's 2007, it's South Korea, still an extremely patriarchal society, mm-hmm. still extremely conservative. They're like, we are just going to edge this back just a little. We're not going to fully commit to this. We're just going to hint at it. But what they did with him says so much about what the writer's intent that I'm sometimes willing to overlook the extremely big flaws in the writing and the other character developments. But also, like, Gong Yoo, I don't think anyone could have played that character the same way.
Oh, 100%.
No, absolutely.
You know what my favorite, like, line from him is when they're, like, they... Like, he accepts everything and he kisses her, like, while she's painting. And he says, like, I don't care if you're a man or an alien.
Yes.
The way he just has her in his, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. This is so funny.
He's like, and then he goes, let's go in. Let's go as far as we can go. Let's go to the end. Let's go.
Yes. And another thing with him is he's also an extremely affectionate person. Like, mm-hmm. he's very...
I wanted to talk about that skinship in this drama.
I like Han Kyu because he's also one of the most tactile male characters I've seen in a K-drama. Like, he's very affectionate with Woo Chan. Like, even when they were just friends, even before he was questioning his feelings, whatever, even as just casual friends, he was very affectionate and very, you know, caring towards this person. Like, he was amused by Woo Chan because he's like, this person that eats like amounts of food, he was very affectionate and very friendly, but then, like, as his feelings developed, he became more tactile and more affectionate. He's like me. I think my love language is touch. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, people that I'm close to, like, this during quarantine, I miss touching people. Like, even my sister who I live with, like, I don't really touch because, like, I'm immunocompromised, but, like, I miss touching people. And, like, for me, like, I'm like him. For him, once he fully commits, even before he finds out that she's a girl, when he commits to Eun-chan as a man, the first thing he does is hugs and kisses her. And then there's one of the scenes is that when they're sitting at the bar, mm-hmm. and she has to leave, and he pulls her back and he mm-hmm. literally wraps his body around her. That's, I'm like, awesome. I love this.
I think it's interesting because I don't think she's used to affection at all. Eun-chan, yes. Like, she is not used to touch. Like, her mind is literally like, I need to work, I need to make money. I need to make sure that my mom isn't gambling. I need to make sure, like, you can see she barely, I mean, like, she's all rough and stuff, but she barely touches anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that do? She kind of has that distance between her and it's like, there's no affection. So I think it was also a big deal for her when he grabbed her hand after they got together. And it's also, it was a big step for her too, as well, when, what's his name? Hansa, when he grabbed her face, like, you could see the fear in her eyes, not because she didn't know, like, she was like, is he gonna kiss me? But because the touching was so, like, unfamiliar to her. So it was very interesting to see, like, the dynamics between one person who's all touchy-feely and then the other one who's like, no touch, thank you. That's what I noticed.
That's really good.
And also once the thing with her is also because he's kind of her gateway to affection. Like, you notice in the scenes with the other princes, they are more affectionate towards each other after that. Like, when they go to the
team building,
they're also more affectionate to each other too. I'm not sure if that was a conscious thing by the directors and the writers, or if that just developed naturally because the cast became really close, but they were also became more affectionate and I think more easier with them. And this is also, I really gotta say, like, boundaries, because boundaries is a very important thing in the script. This is also where one of the flaws for the show comes in for me. We didn't really mention it in the cons section, but we could kind of mix it up, so, because we're doing both pros and cons. But one of my cons for the show, for the writing, is Min Yup's character. And where his boundaries as an individual and as a person are not respected mm-hmm. by Eun-chan's sister. And, like, where she, this is where her selfishness really shows through. And this is where, this is something in Korean dramas or Asian dramas in general, where men's boundaries and feelings and agency of personhood are not respected. Even up to now, 2020, we would have female characters say and do anything to male characters, and the male characters are not expected to respond in the defense because simply because they're men. Like, a woman can insult you, slap you, kick you, bite you, whatever, but if he defends himself, whether verbally or physically, he's considered, they'll be like, oh my God, are you a pervert? That's something that always annoys me. Or you know, or are you a booze or whatever? And I'm like, no, like for Minyo, he's a very innocent character in the fact that he's not, I wouldn't say simple-minded, but he looks at things from a very black and white perspective. If he sees something is good, it is good for him. If it's bad, it is bad for him. And like for Eunchan's sister, she's extremely selfish, and she's extremely selfish with Eunchan, also with Minyo. And this is, for me, the writing is, it doesn't give him the respect as a person he deserves, because she belittles him almost constantly. She's abusive because she slaps him for no, there's a scene where she slaps him because for literally no reason, or when he started to speak up for himself, she'd be like, how dare you talk back? I'm like, first thing first, you're younger than him, check it please. Two, like, wait, I'm like, know your place. And then two, like, he's saying something that he doesn't like. If you're doing something that he doesn't like, you have to respect him, but she's telling him that he's talking back. And I'm like, no. And I didn't like that with the writing. And it happens a few times with other characters too. Like, even with Sunki, he said, I think it was the manager, he did something, and Sunki was like, I don't appreciate this. And the manager, the old man, was like, well, you gotta accept it. Yeah. And I'm like, nah, that should not be. Like, and that's something that still persists in K-dramas today. It's one of my biggest issues with K-dramas, where men are not allowed to speak up for themselves or to really voice their opinions or to really say if they've been hurt. It's getting better, but it's not as good as it should be.
That's true.
Yeah. And so we kind of talked about the pros and cons and stuff, but I want to talk next. I want us to talk about our overall, what, despite the flaws, what is it about Coffee Prince that makes it a classic? And why we would happily rewatch it again, despite all the stuff that aggravates us. And then we'll discuss the Coffee Prince special, which was a recent documentary that they did to celebrate the 13 years of the show. So Josie, you can go first this time.
I think for me, it's just how real everything feels. The way the director, and we'll talk about her when we talk about the special, but on the second watch, I realized like the way she filmed this is really real. Like from the sweat on the characters, from the way their outfits were, the way when something's happening and then you look in the background, I don't know if you guys notice, like when they're in the coffee shop, you can see them in the background, the princes in the background hitting each other, playing around or working, or it feels like you're actually in the drama itself. And I love the way it's shot because it just feels like I'm watching a super indie drama. Like it was so beautiful. Like the way there's this one scene, I just keep thinking about it. They're at a convenience store and there's just extras walking around, and then they have this cake, and then the guy is singing and he lifts his shirt and scratches, and I'm like, this is a drama, what's going on? But it makes everything feel so real, and the characters feel so real. Like I feel like I know Minyeop, I feel like I know Harim, I feel like I know Hangul and Hamsung, like you know these people. So even on the second watch, even you know, after all of these years, it still feels super special. Like I get to see a glimpse of what this life could be like, and you kind of lose yourself in the drama. So I think that's why people responded to it, because it felt so real to them. You know, it's like, you know Hangul and you want to protect him at all costs. And I also think the relationships between everybody, although they're flawed, they're real. Like we know a Yuju and a Hansung in real life. You know, we might not like to be around them, but you know people like that. And so I think that's probably that overall reason for me.
Justin?
I 100% agree. Like the whole realism, how realistic everyone is, and how like they're not one dimensional. Everyone is flawed. Everyone has their own like they have their own issues, and they're all, it's just like people just trying to live their life. And I think that's what makes Coffee Prince special. Like you said, like, it's very realistic. We know someone like this, or we've been through these experiences. Even though with Hansel and Yuju, even as toxic as they are, I can also see myself or my friends or someone in them with the way we express ourselves with each other. Like, I grew up not being able to communicate my feelings. So I may be yelling to somebody else to, like, look at me, understand what I'm saying. Like, I could see myself in their relationship. I can also see myself in Hangul and Eunchan's relationship, her being 24 and being super confused about everything and having this one track mind. Like, I can see myself in that, those characters. I can see myself, like you said, Josie, in the extras, just being on the sidelines, doing your own thing while someone else is going through their own issues. Like, I feel like that's what makes it extra special, because you can literally input yourself and your experiences inside of the drama. And that's what makes the drama beautiful. Plus, it's in this kind of like serene place, this beautiful place where everything is supposed to be wonderful because everyone's handsome and they're princes, but then it's like they're all flawed and going through their own issues.
No, agree. Same for me. And for me, one of the reasons I really like this drama is I appreciate what the writers were trying to do in discussing sexuality. And like, that would have been a pretty big thing to make obvious in a K-drama at that time. Because while there would have been, because while Korea, South Korea is known for things like erotic films and dramas that can be very, they have no problem with violence on screen, and in, especially in films with like violence and sexuality, and like some of the most famous erotic films are South Korean films. But for them to do that in a drama, in a primetime spot, in summer, which is where you get the height of drama watching, for them to even try to discuss homosexuality and gender identity and also suicidal norms, because what they did with Eunchan is they were discussing how women bear the brunt of supporting their families, even because South Korea is extremely patriarchal. Like, they didn't have a father, but they were still trying to discuss the pressures that women she's the oldest daughter, so everything is on her shoulders to support their families. And they don't make it overt, it's kind of subtle, but they're saying like women have these struggles too. Women have to worry about making money to support their families, about looking after their sisters and their mothers. And they're like, it's not just men, it's women too. And I appreciate that they were doing that, and they're discussing the insecurities that women feel by society to be feminine. Like, what does it mean to be feminine? Do we have to conform to societal norms and patriarchal ideas of femininity? Like, is femininity wearing heels and flowy dresses and having long hair, wearing pretty makeup? Or is femininity just being comfortable in yourself as a woman? Just being comfortable in yourself as female and having someone be attracted to you, whether you're wearing heels or sneakers, whether you're wearing a skirt or baggy pants, right? And or do you have long hair and short hair? Like, they're like, what makes a woman a woman? And I appreciate, like, there are some points where they could have gone, I think, a bit more explicit and a bit more obvious in the messaging. Mm-hmm. I think that's one thing that wasn't actually discussed, where it would have been nice if you had a scene with Eunchan, maybe even talk with either Yuju, even her sister or her mother, about what makes me a woman. Like, you know, that would have been nice. But I think that's where one more episode would have been a benefit, because there was time to discuss these things, because they kind of like rushed the ending a lot. But I appreciate those, that's what the messages the writers were saying. I appreciate the romance, even once they did get together, I appreciated the romance between them. I appreciated the friendship they had. I love that they were friends before they became lovers. Yeah. I appreciate the acting, and like this show was done in 2007, and it's to me still extremely relevant because of the topics discussed. It's, even though it's filmed in 2007, like, to me the film quality still actually holds really well, and it's still entertaining. Like, now we watched it recently, but so I think we picked up on a lot more issues with it, but those issues I think help us appreciate it more. And I just love Gang Yoo too. but Yoon Eun-hye, who plays Eun-chan, like their casting, like the director did a fantastic job matching. They had perfect chemistry. They worked really well together. And even the princess, who as Josie mentioned, like how they were very real in the background. All these people, like I used to work in a cafe. I was a barista. So I know that like, I would be like one thing would be happening at the cashier and something else completely different would be happening in the background or outside, like somebody would be cleaning a window or whatever. So like it feels very real. It feels very real. It didn't feel super scripted. It didn't feel like, you know what I mean? Like where everything felt natural. Like you said, it felt like you were just there observing them. And that's one of the things I really appreciate about this drama. I could watch it again this next week. I can watch it again in a year and still love it. And still have moments of being annoyed. But that's one of the beauties of K-dramas. There are things that we love and there are things that frustrate the hell out of us, but we still keep going back. And on that note, we'll go now to discuss the...
Can I add one more thing?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so what I did realize, I'm glad you brought up the whole women and societal norms, because what I did realize when I watched it again is how like you were saying Eun-chan, you know, whether you're dressing up all girly or anything, then I remembered Yuju, her getting pregnant and then them deciding like should we get married or should we not, and even about the mom, how she's a widow and her also contemplating dating and or getting remarried was something that I didn't even realize until we rewatched it. Like when I watched it in high school, I was like, okay, yeah, she's pregnant. Of course they have to get married, like, duh. And then when she got on her knees and like proposed, it was like a whole shock to me. Like, how the heck are you doing this? Because the man is supposed to propose. Like that was my thinking in high school. But then seeing it now, it's like them deciding like, do I get married to you just because I'm having a baby? Can I be a single mother? Even the woman with Sunki, when he was like, she said, you can't come into my house because I'm a single mom. Mm-hmm. Like, who will think something about it? Like, those are things I didn't see when I first watched it. So,
yeah those are the things that I think are the more subtle aspects where they're talking about societal pressure for women. And that's where I think they could have been more overt, because like you mentioned, for Sunki and the woman that he was in love with, like he wanted to visit her, and she was like, she has to consider what her neighbors will think. Mm-hmm. She has to, like, you know, for her it could be a scandal, it could be a big huge mark against her. This just this one man who they presume, like, the neighbors don't know if he's single, the neighbors don't know if he's married, the neighbors don't know if she's his her brother, cousin, whatever. But because he's a man going into this single woman's house who has a child, and they presume out of wedlock, then it would be a scandal, because then she'd be like considered, like in the Caribbean we would say, a loose woman. And and something as simple as that could damage a woman's reputation, and it could make things difficult for her. And it's where, like, that's where, as I said, I think the show could have gone a bit more into it, because that's for that scene, I think she should have explained to him exactly what the ramifications of that happening would be.
And like, even Yuju's, oh I'm sorry,
no go ahead.
I was just thinking while you were talking, even the way they dealt with Yuju's miscarriage, mm-hmm. like the earlier dramas around that time, you know, having a child is kind of like a sign of womanhood, like this, like you can bring a son, a daughter into the family, and a handsome being related to this, you know, Chaebol family, like he's the cousin, and she loses the baby. And the way they treat it, it's kind of like, that happens. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that happens. We're not going to vilify her. It's not her fault. It just happens. She's just gonna, life continues. And while you two were talking, I was just going through my mind. I'm like, yeah, that's a beautiful way to honor all the women. I mean, of course there's other flaws, but I think that writer in her mind, like she's like, you know what? I'm pretty sure in our country, there's tons of women who are being pressured to have children, who can't have children and who don't want children. Mm-hmm. And that's completely fine. It doesn't make you any less of a woman. And I think that was really cool. Just thinking about it now, I think that's really cool how she just,
No, they did that, because like with Yuju proposing to Hanson, that was a pretty big thing then too, mm-hmm. because you have a woman proposing to the man, and she's confirming that she loves him as much as he loves her, because for the whole show, it was about him being more vulnerable, about him being the one that was hurt. And I think it was important for her to do that to show that she really is committed to this, because she kept making statements about, maybe I'll go back to DK, maybe I'll go back to New York. She needed to show him, I am all in this time, like, I'm fully committed to this. And I think it was also important to show that women have an equal footing in the relationship. Yeah. They didn't just show that, because it's kind of like an unsaid assumption that when a man proposes to a woman, he is taking control of the relationship. Mm-hmm. The person taking control of how this thing will progress. But having her do that, take the initiative to propose to him, it was only about the emotional, but it was also about, I guess you could say metaphorically, saying we are in this together, we are on equal footing. I am, and remember, they both put on rings at the same time, because they would have put on a couple rings, but she is the one that took the initiative. So I think it was important, not only as a message for society, but it was important as a message for the couple, for the characters that they were. But and then dealing with the things like miscarriage and loss, there was a drama, it was the melodramatic, where there's a character, like, she doesn't have a miscarriage, but her fiance dies, spoiler, sorry. But it was about how they showed grief, about how her grief impacted her. And for me, Coffee Prince doesn't go full on into like showing her how grief impacts her emotionally, but there was this little moment, because they did a time skip, mm-hmm. and it showed her, I think it was 2 years, because this is just before Moon Chan came back, and she still had the baby booties. Mm-hmm. And so like her and Hanson are married, but she still has these boobies, these little booties, and she just goes out and puts them on the railing and just looks at them at night. And it's just showing that even though they didn't show her being fully, like, you know, emotionally devastated, they were still showing that even 2 years later, the loss of a pregnancy will have an emotional impact on a woman. It will have an emotional impact on the man too, because it showed him coming to comfort her, and they discussed the baby. It wasn't, they weren't trying mm-hmm. to act as if this was something to forget. They were like saying, we had a baby, we lost it, and that's important to acknowledge. So I love that they did that too. And I kind of wish it happened more in dramas now, where when they do those kind of things, they acknowledge grief from both partners' perspective, instead of focusing on just one, that they show both the male and the female have emotional connections, and they both suffer loss. That's something that I wish happened more, not only in Asian dramas, but, you know, Western productions too, because, like, usually if they talk about miscarriage, they only focus mainly on the woman, where yes, she's a mom who carried baby, but like the husband or the boyfriend or the spouse had an emotional connection to this child too. So that's where I think the show really does, like, they did a lot of things that I think that wouldn't have been really mentioned at that time, but they really put as much as they could into the show. So again, as I said, that's why I would definitely watch it again. And like for the Coffee Prince special, which we'll discuss now, they talk about a lot of these things in the Coffee Prince special, and the title is My Dear Youth, Coffee Prince. And this was a documentary special, it was 2 episodes created by NBC. And it was, they're doing it for a few other shows. I can't remember the other shows, but they've done it for a couple other things. But for this one, they did it for the 13-year anniversary of Coffee Prince. And they went back to the exact same set, which is still functioning. It functions as a tourist attraction and as a functioning cafe, because my friend went there last year. It was in Hongdae. And it still looks the exact same way. The details, like, it was so nostalgic to see them. And it was so good to see the actors there again, and Gong Yoo being all emotional and bashful and remembering specific scenes. And for both of you, what was it like watching the special, especially since we watched it right after rewatching the series?
It was nice. I felt it, like, they had this nostalgic feeling. Like, I feel like I was going back to my high school reunion or something. Mm-hmm. Like, you're seeing all the people that you grew up with or that you went to class with. And then seeing how they've aged or matured was so cool. And then watching their expressions and their feelings when they were watching those specific scenes, like, those are the scenes I wanted them to watch. Like, I always wondered, like, how did you feel when you were filming this scene where you're super angry that Eun-chan lied to you? Or how did you feel with this scene? How did you feel with that scene? So watching them watch it too was very beautiful. And it just, I don't know, it just gave me a warm feeling inside. And all of them still look the same. Like, they all look the same. And I feel like I like that they're still close together and that they still talk to each other and they give advice to one another. And it's just nice to know that it's not just a special, Copy Prince is not just special to us as the viewers, but also to them. And then getting the insights of how each of them felt with each other, like Gangyu was talking about how, or the director was talking about how she asked Gangyu, like, how do you feel about Yoon Min-hae? And he's like, I need to worry about myself. I can't really worry about somebody else and what their thing is, but also like seeing their dynamics when they first started together. So it was very nice.
Yeah, yes. Josie? Yeah.
Same, very nostalgic, very warm. It was nice seeing how they paired them up with Gongyu and Park Geun-hye together in the coffee, the cafe. And then they had, I believe, Jung-gan and Sung-gyun in their house, And then just seeing their reactions to each other, how they're still super comfortable. Jung-gan she stole both episodes for me. Like, the way she played around with Gun, they're just so funny. And she's so over the top and she's so free. And I just love her character. And then Dong-wook and Jae-wook together, knowing that they're still, after 13 years, they're still really good friends. And knowing that Coffee Prince was a lot of their first works or their first major works, and how they're so appreciative and so grateful to that drama, and how, because it propelled them to other things and how it brought them together not only, but kind of was like their first real big acting job. And it was so nice to see the insight from the director and how I did not know, because this is my second time watching it. I did not know it was a female director. I did not know, which makes some sense. And also makes the drama even more special, because in 2007, there weren't a lot of female directors. Mm-hmm. And even in 2020, there aren't a lot of female directors. And so that kind of made the drama even more special. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. And I watched it again.
I love the special because I as a film critic and as a fan of films, and someone who does this for a living, but also, you know, for fun, I love the behind the scenes specials for films or TV shows. I just love knowing how things are created. I love knowing how these projects are created, but I also love, not only from a technical aspect, but also from an emotional aspect, like for the actors and for the directors and the writers. I love knowing how they went into this, like their mindsets during a film, and like what they took away from it and what helped them to grow as individuals. And like for all of them, this show, even though they had other projects, this one was the one that was most popular. This one was the one that made them become literally household names in Korean dramas. And it was this one because, like, for Gangyu, he did this and then he enlisted and he was gone for 2 years and he came back and he was still just as popular as when the show was released. Then, like, for all of them, like, it really set a trend for them as actors. I think because they all said that this was the one where they wanted filming to last longer, because they were just having so much fun on set. Like, they grew so close together that this was the one they would not have minded if they had like more months to film. And I think, and you can tell they mean that genuinely, because they're all so comfortable with each other. Like you mentioned, Lee Sung Kyung and Chae Jung-an, like, they're so comfortable together. Like, the two of them really got into the clips from the show. Like, they were both saying, we gotta really rewatch the drama, because they were like real viewers, you know, like getting all emotional, and Jung-an was like gasping and saying, oh my god, all the time, and they were like fully invested. And then you had Jae-wook and Dong-wook being funny and making fun of each other, and the characters, like, Dong-wook talking, like, an emotional scene is going, he's like, oh, their skin looks amazing. Like, this make emotional scenes that y'all thought of it, how good their skin looks on screen. But like, I just love that they did this special in 13 years. And I also love the little in memoriam moment they did for Eon, because he had passed away in 2008. Like, it just showed you how much they miss each other and how much they miss him and like what he meant to them as a person. And I just love that they did that. I wish they would do it for more dramas, not only for the older ones, but even for the newer ones. And like, I hope it becomes a continuity thing, because I think it's also important for fans to realize that these are actors, these are individuals, and they have thoughts and feelings about the same thing. Because, you know, fans could get really caught up and say, oh my, and you know, that I idolize them, and not and only see them as the characters. I think this also helps humanizes them as actors and as people. So I love that they did that. And like the director, who's Eun Joon, like, she, like, the reasons that she gave for why she casted them were very interesting. Like, the reason she said she casted Gong Yoo, one of the reasons was because she, when she asked him about Yoon Eun-hee's acting, he's like, who am I to judge her acting? Yeah. Right? And I thought it was amazing. He's like, I can't judge her acting. Like, if you think she's the right person for the job, hire her. He's like, I can't judge her. And I'm like, she like, that was one of the main reasons she hired him, because she likes that he's going in not having any preconceived notions about this person who's going to play his robust interest. Mm-hmm. And the same thing for the other actors. And like, she hired Eon because he was this big man, but he's this soft, and she has this soft and gentle personality. Mm-hmm. And like, and he was also very serious too, like for them. But she was like, they were the antithesis of their characters. Like, Dong-woo's character is like fun and playful, but in real life he's more serious one, whereas Kim Jae-woo, he always plays like these super serious characters, but he's the one who makes more, he's the one that cracks jokes and is more open in real life. So I thought that was hilarious. Because even like us, like as fans, we would think, oh, he is kind of like his character. He's the complete opposite of all the characters I've seen him play. Mm-hmm. Like, he plays psychopaths and that kind of stuff. And we're in real life, he's like a jokester and a jokester. So like, I just love that. And I love those kind of things. And I just hope that more people find Coffee Prince and have discussions. And again, just like K-dramas, and the reason I call the show Beyond the Romance is there's so much more to these shows beyond the romance. Like, there's the themes and the aesthetics and the directing and the writing. And I just like being able to like pick things apart. And I'm so glad that you guys joined me today for that. And as we wrap up, we're going to say what dramas have we been watching, and what any that you would recommend to our listeners. And I think, and then you can say where we can find you on social media, anything that you're up to or you would like to promote, and then you would finish. So Josie, what is there any particular drama that you are watching now or watched recently that you would, that you really enjoyed and that you would recommend for anyone else to watch?
Just finished up, maybe I think it was last month, finished Stranger 2. Mm-hmm. So if anyone has not watched that, please go ahead. I don't think you necessarily need to watch the first season to enjoy the second season, but I would suggest you watch the first season first and then the second season. They're on Netflix USA. And I just finished up Missing the Other Side, which is a very emotional drama, and I loved it very, very much. And very good acting, very good acting. And currently, and we just finished up Lie After Lies, and I'm currently watching a J-drama, Cherry Magic, and I am watching Missing Nine, and I'm watching Nine-Tailed Fox, and Search.
Wait, you said Missing Nine? Is that a K-drama too?
Yes, it's from 2017. I'm just watching it again because Chan-yeol is going to be enlisting, so.
Oh, wait, I think I watched that.
Mm-hmm. The one where they're stranded and...
The plane crash?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I haven't watched that, but I have the soundtrack on my phone because there's a song that Punch sings that I love.
Yes.
And for you, Joycelyn?
I feel like we're watching basically the same thing. Like, I just finished Lies After Lies. I'm really obsessed with Cherry Magic. Like, I keep watching it over and over again. I'm watching Search for the plot, only strictly the plot, nothing else.
It's a very good plot.
Yes, very good. Let me see. I would recommend Flower of Evil. Like, the way I love this drama, like, you don't understand. The way I love this drama. It's amazing. So I would recommend that. Mm. I'm also watching Private Lives. So that that one's kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah. We've all three of us are basically watching mostly the same dramas because a lot of them they came out recently. So like we chat about them on Twitter a lot. But for me, the shows that we watched that just wrapped up was Lie After Lie. That's on Viki. That one was really good. It has some issues with story development though. There are some things that were just
leave them babies alone. They're trying.
Listen,
I love Yuju, the wandering child.
The wandering child. Somebody needs to teach that child about stranger danger. and then Lie After Lie. So that's Lie After Lie. Flower of Evil was amazing. Probably in my top 5 for the year. I would recommend anyone to go watch. It's Okay to Not Be Okay. That one is on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Hospital Playlist is also on Netflix. That's a K-drama. For Chinese dramas, I've been watching recently. One is called Marry Me. This one is kind of funny. Is the couple that keep getting remarried. They've been married like 3 years, 3 times. Which for a historical, I can't remember the name for this genre, but it's the historical ones, but more comedic. The, you know, like the funny, more upbeat ones. So it's not like a straight action, serious drama. That one's on, yeah, I can't say what site that's on. It's not
exactly. Probably on YouTube.
Yeah, I think you can find it on YouTube. There's one that I watched. Oh, The King's Avatar. So this one's a gameplay drama. I was pleasantly surprised by this one. This one you can find on Netflix.
Saved it because of you.
Yeah, it's 40 episodes, but like I breezed through those 40 episodes in like a few days. And at the end, I was like, oh crap, this is the last episode. I actually wanted more. And I'm like, I would take a season 2.
Season 2 is coming.
Because the production quality for this show is fantastic. The money they put into producing the game scenarios, the scenes, bravo to the fight choreographers, bravo to the VFX team, the director, everybody, because like those fight scenes, I've seen better fight scenes in these animated gameplay scenarios than I see in big budget films. Okay, like Avengers, You Wish You Could. No, I mean, just from the fight choreography is really well executed. And this is, and would have had to take an extreme amount of effort because it's all animated and it has to look the game. And they have to match up the dialogue and the acting, the directing to fit the scenes for the game. So like that's like, bravo to all everybody who worked on that show. And that's only the second one that I've watched that I really enjoyed. The first one was Love O2O. And this one is, and it's the same lead actor, Yang Yang, but this one is, Love O2O, I think was 2016. Mm-hmm. And The King's Avatar, I think was 2018. So there's like a 2-year difference, but the quality was like 10 times better. Like the game called the quality for the VFX is 10 times better. One thing I'll say about DC dramas for these ones, when they commit to the VFX, they go all in. And it reminded me of Memories of the Alhambra. Like Memories of the Alhambra, they spent some good money on the VFX for that show. And another one that I watched recently was Fantasy Supernatural Epic. This one was also made in China. This one was Evernight.
Oh, I love Evernight.
I know. I didn't think I was gonna enjoy it, but I breezed through all 2 seasons in the space.
What genre is Evernight?
It's a period supernatural epic.
Yeah.
Ooh. So like the first season is 65
episodes. Okay, I didn't even notice that's how long it was because I was just watching it over and over and over again.
It's really good. I was pleasantly surprised. And like some of the dialogue is, you know, super cheesy. Like one of the biggest failures to me for these mainland China dramas is their dialogue is kind of weak. But I'm like, you know what? I'm here for the costume design and pretty people. And
you said, did you notice the Pizza Hut? Hmm? There's Pizza Hut.
What?
In season 1, it's a Pizza Hut.
Yes, I saw the like pizza. It doesn't say that it's Pizza Hut, but when you look at it, he's calling this thing a pie. I'm like, that's a pizza. It's a pepperoni pizza too. I'm like, didn't even try to disguise. I'm like, this is a pepperoni pizza. And those are chicken wings.
Yeah, they have the icon of it. And I'm just like, I know this. Yes.
I'm like, this is pizza and a wings. And this is supposed to be something in like the 13th century or something. I'm like, but they have pizza and chicken wings and like hot wings. I'm like, but it's hilarious. Like the product placement, Like, you know, for these Asian dramas, we always talk about the product placement. Like, yeah. They got it in with this show. And, like, the way they did the product placement is freaking ingenious, but also freaking hilarious.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, we'll wrap up. So that's it. So those are our recommendations. And again, thank you so much for joining us and for my first episode for Beyond the Romance Drama Podcast. And thank you to Josie and Joycelyn for joining me. And is there anything you guys would like to promote or to say where people can find you on social media?
I don't have anything to promote, but you can follow me on Twitter if you want. What is my Twitter? Hold on. JG, I have to look at it. JG _ humanitarian. And follow me if you want to talk about soap operas or anything. That's it.
Josie?
I don't have anything to promote, but you can follow me on Twitter, Josie in the 90s, and 90s is 90 and then the S, and it's all one word. So, you know, I tweet about K-dramas and music, all kinds, and my love of EXO's Park Chan-yeol.
Yes, and you can find me on Twitter at CarrieCNH12, that's CarrieCNH12, Twitter and Instagram. And for the podcast, I'm using the hashtag Dramas with Carrie for my live tweets for the dramas. So, like, if you want to catch up with the shows I'm watching and tweeting about, just follow the hashtag, you'll find them. You can also find my other live tweet that I do for Saturday Night Sci-Fi. Every Saturday at 10 p.m. Eastern, we live tweet sci-fi and genre shows. You can usually find on Netflix. And also, you can find my other podcast, so Here's What Happened podcast with my co-host, Lanisha. Also found here on this website, butwhythepodcast.com. And for my final promo, you can also find my roundtable interview. Remember, I'm a film critic. So I've been, as part of the Africa Film Critics Association, we've been doing virtual roundtables with Black creatives in the film and television industry. And you can find our interviews with Yahya Abdul-Mateen for his latest film, The Trial of the Chicago 7, our interview with Rada Blank for her film, The 4-Year-Old Virgin. Both films found on Netflix, and also the interviews with the cast of the cast and creative team of P-Valley and a whole, I'm trying to think of anything that's coming up soon. Also, yes, with Remy Meeks, the director of His House, which is a film coming out at the end of October. That film showed that Sundance, and it's an amazing horror. It's very emotional, and there's like legit scares. And you can find those video or roundtables on their YouTube channel and also on their Twitter, which is the AFCA, AAFCA. And I think that's it. Again, please wear a mask, wash your hands, everyone. Be safe.